Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil, and Giddy, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Newchon and Cap tomorrow as the After Midnight Bombers. On Thursday, delve into a world of strange magic with incoherent best Victoria Frost. Friday is a split between Crawling in Darkness with Sam and Break on Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of art dinner, art paint. Now, Monday mornings, bring in the hearts of LMT with the B-Twins, Victoria and Versus. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Cam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your work. Hey, Cam, what's doing?
Hey, Rex, I'm doing great. You know, it's just one of those really nice days where the weather was kind of just spot on, and I got a little bit of everything done, some cleaning, some cooking, running errands, even got time to do a little bit of reading of poetry for the show tonight, and a little bit about Pythagoras. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name right, but I looked up the pronunciation, but I think it kind of leaked it in one ear and out the other. But I do remember it has the P-E sound at the beginning, which is at least closer than I was pronouncing it, which is something along the lines of Pythagoras. But how are you doing?
I'm all right. Pythagoras.
Awesome. Oh.
Yeah.
What's that?
That's funny. Pythagoras.
Pythagoras. Pythagoras.
It's Pythagoras.
No, it's pronounced with a P-E sound, a P-E sound. I looked it up. It's not pronounced pi, it's pronounced P-E. But...
Yeah, but you still need the strength held on that second set, Pythagoras.
Pythagoras. There you go, Pythagoras. I'm just going to start calling him Asparagus. I think that's easier to pronounce. And he's dead, so he's not going to care. Oh, man. So Quick Trip now has a bunch of newfangled coffee machines, which totally, on the bad side, totally fucked up my usual iced coffee that I get on Monday. But on the good side, they now have the option with your coffee drinks, your espresso coffee drinks, of having either a one shot, double shot, or triple shot of espresso.
Is that on the honor system?
I probably. I don't know. I mean, you just push a button, and supposedly the machine gives you what you ask for. So I decided to go for the triple shot. I think next time maybe I'll go double, but, you know, we'll see. Hopefully next time anyways the machine will work better. But anyways, I have to say, I did not realize that, you know, Pythagoras, he's quite interesting, rather a bit of a loony, I suppose, like, you know, he was accredited as being the first man, the first person to ever call himself a philosopher.
Yeah, he dug into a few things.
Yep, yeah. Not only philosophy, but spirituality, mathematics, all kinds of interesting stuff. That's for sure. All right. Well, what do you say? Shall we get the ball rolling?
Yep.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Up first we have As I Am by Lyric is Speaking. And we do have a recording for that, so here we go.
Tonight's read is going to be As I Am by Lyric is Speaking. As I am, I become strong like in that of judgment. To my surface, all is revealed. As I am, I show that of my night and day. As I am, there is always promise for me to see all I achieve inevitably. As I am, I knew there was always hope for fulfilling my destiny's chase. As I am, I show that of me, all my love for oneself openly. As I am, strong with strength and will to instill. As I am, I adore that of me. As I am, I love to hear that of my name spoken loudly like that to fame. As I am, powering embodiment, standing tall and proudly, not letting shame sink in, allow me to fall. As I am. End point.
Great read, Lyric. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Now, there was some strength in that. Yes, ma'am.
There
maybe.
Really was. Oh, did you want to comment first?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I really like this. As always, she's got a clear, strong speaking voice that she uses it well for punctuation. Always can, you know, just really knows how to achieve grabbing your attention and keeping it. I like the repetitiveness of as I am, to me, it's really just, it's a wonderful write about self-confidence, but at the same time, you know, because of the I am statement being reflective of Christ saying I am, I feel like there's a kind of a spirituality in this, a spirituality of being the person that you know reflects the best part of yourself. That person that gives, I show that of me all my love for oneself openly, strong with strength and will instilled. I adore that of me. I love to hear that of my name spoken loudly like that thing. Powering and embodying, standing tall and proudly. I like the idea of someone, and it's not standing, like there's really not a sense of arrogance in the tone of this poem. What there is there's this sense of knowing that you are created for a higher purpose than being a lowly person, than being, kowtowing to everybody and anybody, that you have your own voice in your own heart, and you have a voice to use, so stand up proudly and use it. I just really like the strength of character and the spirituality that I see in this write.
Okay. On that level, I can only answer one thing. Drill sergeant in the army of God.
It does sound like that. It does. Drill sergeant?
Yeah, I drill sergeant totally in the army of God. The voice
totally
in that came across
see
that
Lyric
way.
Being a drill sergeant.
Huh?
I could totally see Lyric being a drill sergeant with that voice.
Yeah, and since you put the spiritual angle out there, you might as well drop in it, the army of God. You will believe. I am.
I like that.
Baptism is the belief.
Yeah, no, you make a really good point there, Rex, because each verse is something different. And so it does kind of, now that you mentioned, have that feel of putting on the full armor of God. That is really cool.
Huh.
All right.
It works.
Yeah. I I think so. And, of course, if we are completely off base or way off in left field, then, you know, Lyric can always say something because that's what people are free to do. I do enjoy talking about poetry. All right. Did I tell you? Oh, Mindy sent me a couple of sexy cow pictures to use for Wednesday night. One is a sexy geisha cow, and the other is a sexy librarian cow.
Yeah, send that one over to Faisy.
That's what I was thinking. That's a good idea. I should do that. I'll definitely have to send that one to Faisy. All right. And up next, we have Make Known the Truth by Babe. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Make Known the Truth by Babe. I'll not be still, oh no, seeing as I have the nerve to speak, the courage for what some have dubbed my cheek. I'll bend the English language to my will, and so invert the metaphor. Silver is your fear of losing friends, a silence that foretells of evil ends. Speak, yes, speak, or what's a language for? Gold be the hearty and the brave, not gold of banks or gilded mansion gates. Gold to challenge all the ills of fate, gold to out the scoundrel and the knave. Speech of gold to lead us from the dark. In silence we shall surely die alone. Yes, even one word trumps a grunt, a moan. So raise your voice and dare to leave your mark. Who tells me to be quiet, to be still, or takes from me my ever faithful pen? Soon will tell me what to do and when. Afraid to speak, it just might cause a riot. If censorship persists, I think I will end poem. And you get the comment.
All right. Well, first of all, great read. I really am enjoying Babe's poetry and the fact that he's been writing for the shows and supporting them. I've come to know that he's quite nitpicky when it comes to rhyme, but he's also very helpful. Like, he actually helped me polish up some of the rhyme and meter in one of my poems, which I was very thankful for. What I really like, first of all, about his approach to this prompt is I hadn't really thought of it in that way. Like, I had chosen as one of the quotes, be silent or let thy words be worth more than silence. And to me, that simply just meant don't constantly babble about things that have no meaning. You know, put some thought into what you're going to say. And I really like when poems like this come back almost as a retort of the whole idea of, no, I won't be silent because, you know, I like the humor in this too, the courage or what some have dubbed in my cheek. I'll bend the English language to my will and so invert the metaphor. Silver is your fear of losing friends, you know, and then the whole idea that the gold being the metaphor, not of the actual riches, but the riches of being somebody who speaks up, who raises their voice, who uses language as it's meant to be used. What I think is most important, though, is the ending lines where it says, who tell me to be quiet, to be still, or takes from me my ever faithful pen, soon will tell me what to do and when. I think, you know, when it's a whole idea of when you allow censorship martial rule to just kind of to law over you, and you get into the little things, pretty soon they're taking away the big rights. I just think this is a powerful rite that's done with a nice dash of salty humor. So it's very well done.
All right. Silver is your fear of losing friends. That is the Judas Goat, the 30 shekels of compliance. And the goal would be the sort of standing tall enough to actually voice and not give in to that which is constantly streamed. Bend the knee and just say yes. And that's what the back end of this is. Afraid to speak, it just might cause a riot. If censorship persists, I think I will. It's about to get a lot worse. Seen a lot over the last 2 years, but it's about to get a lot more worse than it already is. And nobody knows it yet, but it's coming. Censorship, big censorship, is on the horizon, just around the bend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And I totally didn't even think about the 30 pieces of silver. That was a good connection there. So, comment. All right. You can't, up next we have You Can't Dull My Shine by Sinharal Biswarup. And it goes like this. You can't dull my shine like the little golden grain defying the monstrous wave. Keep dancing on its helm like the firefly that doesn't care to bother the size of the room in its darkness. How ravishing the even sun looks, even though the huge storm barge put up a mattress of mystery round the firmament. I, too, a headstrong, mundane being, many a time slipped into quicksand. The hellish darkness always fails to dull my shine. For I spill ink to brighten up captive thoughts. Love has won me the world. If you try to blow me out here, I will be kindling elsewhere. End poem.
Great, great, Sam. I like the humor in that last stanza. But it also offers up saying, hey, you might douse me here, but I will not fail to illuminate elsewhere, and I'll still be able to shine. The little golden grave and the monstrous wave, that's a nice touch of the expanse. And I like the firefly, couldn't care less the size of the room in its darkness, and calling the sun a huge storm bag. That was cool. And I like put up a mattress of mystery around the firmament. That's actually a really good stanza right there. And that'll leave you some to say it all already.
Yeah, right. I know you're only leaving me bone to gnaw on. Well, first of all, I really liked the metaphor of the firefly. Firefly that doesn't care to bother the size of the room and its darkness. You know, like the whole idea that, you know, life can be overwhelming, the darkness can be overwhelming, but if you just stay focused on your own glow, I thought that was really clever. Is a storm barge, what is that? Is that like, I don't know what a storm barge is.
Storm bag.
Is that a type of a boat?
Oh, storm barge. Okay, I was thinking storm bag.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. Like, I was thinking barge, like a type of a ship, but that doesn't really make sense. But obviously it has to do with storms. You know what? Maybe... Oh, I'm wondering because, okay, it says, even though the huge storm barge put up a mattress of mystery around the firmament, maybe when there's storms in places like, you know, hurricanes where there's, like, the ocean, and don't they have to put up sandbags and stuff to kind of keep some of the water from coming through? Isn't there something like that? I wonder if it's kind of like one of those kind of things.
Those are sandbags.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm just trying to think what a storm bag.
It might just be a spelling error because I was thinking storm bag because the sun is literally a cosmic reactor, and the mattress of mystery around the firmament would be the space in between everything, because it's dark, cold, outside of that huge storm bag.
Aha, now that makes sense. That makes sense. I used to clean mattresses of mystery when I worked at a hotel. It was always a mystery what the next stain would be. All right, enough of my humor.
Well, the mystery would be which end of the sheet do you pick off the bed first?
Usually one of the bottom corners.
Is it safe to use my hands? Do I got to wear gloves?
Yeah, usually. I recommend it. So what I like about this, I have to stay focused, is I like the idea that this is a person who has confidence in their inner light, but they also admit to having faults. I, too, a headstrong, mundane being many a time slipped into quicksand. But then, you know, as they struggle, they always come forth. They always come out of that captivity. And you are right. There's a nice little bit of humor in that ending. And, the whole idea, like, if you don't want my light, it's kind of got a nice kind of bit of attitude to it. If you don't want my light, then I'll go shine it elsewhere. So, I think it's an excellent write and very well done. All right. And I think we should get into some of our SoundClouds. So, that being said, I'll grab the next poem. Do-do-do. Somebody was doing that on, I think it was on Gray's show, and I just all of a sudden wanted to start singing Camp Down Races, sing this song, doo-da, doo-da, because that's what they kept doing. They kept going doo-da, doo-da, and I can't remember who it was. All right, up next we have Beloved Ashes by Valentina Holloway, and I'll go ahead and get that. Here we go.
Beloved ashes. We came from beloved ashes of a star that sacrificed its life so that it may experience love. And to the beloved ashes of a star we shall return. We are not time's fools. Like the star that granted us life, we wait patiently, basking in the sparks of arcane understanding that flows in tandem through our veins. A glimmer of hope, shining inside, unable to be broken by mere mortals, for it was a gift crafted above that broke through the darkness of clouds. We are mingled eternally as unforgotten stardust love.
Great read, Valentina, and thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Wow, I really like this one. I just think it's absolutely beautiful. I feel like this one, it does two things. I feel like there's a kind of duality to it. First of all, I feel like it personifies stars, but that's kind of the secondary. I should have said that one second. I feel like it shows the true beauty and potential of humanity. And to think, you know, that we came from something as beautiful reverent as stardust. I really like how she put the line, we are not time's fools separately. Like the whole idea that we are eternal beings. There's again, a kind of a spirituality to this. There's a kind of a confidence to this. But it's not a confidence that has swagger. It's a confidence that speaks on a level of knowing that you are equal to the stars. I also feel like, and the third thought that popped in my head, sorry, they're coming but one at a time, is that this also has a mythological feel to it. Almost, I could picture this being an angel speaking to other angels. I really like the layered feel of this, and I really like the imagery of a creation formed from death, because stardust is basically when stars fall apart, when they die. And so the idea that life comes from death and stardust love makes me think of a love that comes from sadness and makes things whole and pure again. I think it's a beautiful rite and very well done.
Woodstock, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. We are stardust. We are golden. We are a billion-year-old carbon. We've got to get ourselves back to the garden. Beloved ashes of a star that sacrificed its life. Again, to the beloved ashes of a star, we shall return. Definitely. The thought, the stars, those supernovas, that those stars that go supernova, those are the remnants which gets seeded around the universe. It's where everything comes from. All of the particles that inherently are on the Earth come from those stars, gold, silver, nickel, tin, lead, plus everything else in between gets filtered across the universe. So, like the star that granted us life, we wait patiently basking in the sparks of arcane understanding that flows in tandem through our veins, with the merfolk shining inside, unable to be broken by mere mortals. We are more than just the thought of, we are not time's fools. There's that thought of time being grander than the thought of us in a single moment. It's larger than we can encompass within our minds, because we don't think beyond the notion of today and our petty little thoughts. And the idea we are mingled eternally is forgotten. Stardust love. You think about it. A lot of people don't know. You go out in space, but everybody says it's empty. Space is full of water. Nobody knows it.
Isn't that just...
Everything that comes here helps seed us and every other planet out there. So stardust is a perfect example of that which is spread from, billions, trillions of miles out through the universe.
Wow. You know, that is just absolutely just, you know, amazing to think about. And it's no wonder when you stand out underneath the stars and look up that you just are filled with such awe. Speaking personally. I like how when you mentioned the whole we are not slaves, time slaves. I liked how you mentioned the idea that we don't always see the big picture. We see little pieces of it.
We've forgotten
so much.
You look at the age-old tribes, the Aborigines in Australia. They speak of the stars, and they tell of where we come from. That second star in the Pleiades, the dwarf star that nobody gets to see. And we didn't know about it until, I think, the 50s or so. But the Aborigines were talking about it for hundreds and hundreds of years as it being there and knowing that it has always been there. Yet, they've never seen it.
That to me is just it's interesting because it's either some of the most powerful example of faith you'll ever hear, or they have other sources. I think either way, it's just absolutely intriguing and fascinating. It's always interesting to me how, when it comes to the planets and science and all that, how there always seems to be a fluctuation of the thinking process. I really liked, and with this, I really liked her closing lines, "We are mingled eternally as unforgotten stardust love." That's a great comment, Rex. I have to say, one of the metaphors, or I didn't think I had read or heard before about not seeing the big picture, is the idea that if you stood underneath a huge, say God or whatever higher power is out there was making a quilt, and you stood underneath the quilt, all you would see are the stitchings on the underside. You wouldn't be able to see the beauty of the full picture.
Right.
Yep.
That works.
And I was like, yeah, I think so. All right. Up next, we have Pure Parents by Peter Solway. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Pure Parents by Peter Solway. Sun and sea, daddy bright and Venus virginal, shining Greek linen, blood-stained, white and blue as the Aegean. Back to their drinking, salted wine each tidal evening, voices in the slipstream, madness departing. Star Express, God light, all the competing business. Furies, shell-shocked orphans, as Larkin wrote, they fuck you up, parents. Left his working lawnmower to Salvation Army, I reckon, love with a locket. Left framed picture of fuck folks to the tip, mom and dad, cheesing it up, and boom. Where you want to go with that one?
All right. Well, you know what I think I'd like to do with this one, because I feel like I've been commenting first a lot, is I'd like to hear what you have to say.
All right. Shining Greek linen bloodstained. Kind of hits me up with the tragedies. There's always a tragic tale within the drama unfolding. White and blue as the Aegean. It offers up the both the roiling and the calm of the Aegean itself. And then you get the Daddy Bright and Venus Virginal. So again, you've got the two opposites. Fact of their drinking. Salted wine each tidal evening. Voices in the slipstream. Madness departing. Kind of a little bacchanalia going on. And what else we got? The sort of parents. They fuck you up, parents. Is that idea of being taught their values to the point where it's overbearing and you don't learn much out of it past that, kind of stay on the same working thoughts. Now, the idea of leaving his working lawnmower to the Salvation Army, that's kind of a funny note, but it kind of hits on that sort of... if it was working lawnmower, why would it be going to the Salvation Army? That's where you usually hand out your throwaway stuff, the stuff that ends up in the garbage.
Yep. That is interesting. I like what you had to say. I especially felt like the second stanza, you were definitely spot on. I will say the first stanza, though, I disagree with you. I think that's actually about the tradition of showing the bloodstained sheet from the broken hymen to prove that the bride had been a virgin on the wedding night. I'm not sure what connection it has to do with the prompt, but that's the image I get from it is the whole the blood that comes from breaking the hymen of a virgin, and then now Larkin is a poet, right?
I would say so.
The name looks familiar. Like, I think it's somebody's last. Well, I know it's somebody's last name, but I can't remember.
Well, I knew a Larkin at one time, so.
Oh,
they
okay.
weren't a poet.
I liked this all the way through, but now with the part where, you know, it says, Fury shell-shocked orphans, as Larkin wrote, they fuck you up, parents. And I like what you had to say there about the whole idea that people impede, and parents in part impede their teaching on their children, on you so much that you almost feel crushed to and suffocated to be able to think for yourself. I very much remember constantly being taught from the Book of Mormon, and it was really difficult to take a breath, and it really didn't happen until adulthood where I got to read and explore more. Now, when you mention left his working lawnmower to the Salvation Army, you asked the question, I think it was a really good question, why would he give the working lawnmower? And it's plain and simple. Well, okay, this is my translation. I shouldn't say it's plain and simple, but this is what I get from, and this is from personal experience, is people who are devoutly religious, and this isn't every one of them, but there are those who they will give everything and anything they can to the church, to the church that they're a part of.
But the Salvation Army is not a church.
It's ran by a church. It is, actually. It's a church organization.
Yeah, but that's more of a place, all right, you donate food, you give used clothes, shoes, blankets, that type of thing.
Right, but it's still the same thing. It's still about showing off. It's all about saying, look, this is what I can do. I'm good. I'm earning my way into heaven. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just telling you how I view this. And I view it as somebody taking the opportunity to show off. But anyways, I think it's an excellent write, and it's very well done. Any other thoughts?
No. I'm going to have to mull over that lawnmower thing.
All right. Now the question is, did I grab the next poem? I think I did. Yes. All right. Up next, we have Poetic Words by Betty Page, and it goes like this. In silence you speak, while my poetic words pierce both share deep meaning. Minds are relentless, tearing at contemplation, speaking with our souls. Leads in each other, lost in fantastic daydreams, love entwined with pain, poetically simmering yet volatile, spinning in our minds, fierce thoughts of what if, what will be if we give in, silent, poetic. May our hearts speak words, bleed as one into our souls, wicked, infinite, spilling our hearts out. Let's say what needs to be said, do what needs to be done, with or without words. Make love to each other's minds, infinite, entwined. And poem.
Wait, read that. This is different for Betty. Really different. There's no sensuality in it, and it's almost straightforward, even with the metaphor running through it. Silence you speak while my poetic words pierce, both share deep meaning. Yeah, the deep meaning in silence being, I don't know what you're thinking, and your silence off offers nothing in return in the moment. The sort of mind's relentlessness, I like that. Believes in each other, yes, from a spread of thought, poetically simmering yet volatile, spinning in our minds. All that hits on the notion of actually using your mind for something other than mundane thought, mundane ideas, the ease of just sitting in front of the boob tube, sort of reading, sort of offering something outside of just, oh, hello, how are you? How about a little bit of conversation? You know, something meaningful.
I like that. I like that. And, yeah, I have to agree. This is different for Betty. I really like it. I think it's absolutely one of my favorites of hers. I think it should be definitely be a front page pick. I like, as you mentioned, the sensuality in it, but that it's a sensuality of the spirit, of the mind. And I like the opening stanza, in silence you speak while my poetic words pierce, both sharing deep meaning. And I like that she says both sharing deep meaning. And the idea that it almost speaks to me of having the wisdom to know when to be silent and when to speak out. What else? I got to stop pacing so much. I really like how this is beautiful all the way through, but I like the what if question. I think that's a very important question. What will be if we give in? You know, and it almost has the kind of a similar thought to the Babe's poem. You know, if we give in to people's demands, I think in that one simple line there's a lot of strength. With or without words, make love to each other's minds, infinite, entwined. I love how there's that both that physical and emotional connection. Do you remember what sci-fi movie was that where he was like in the future or something? I can't remember, but there was like they had this love scene, but the whole love scene was like that they basically connected wires to each other's brain and like did nothing physical. It was all like you know, I wish I could remember. It was like a sci-fi movie back in the 80s. And I can clearly picture the scene, but I can't remember the name of the movie.
I remember Barbarella from the late 60s, early 70s.
Well, it definitely wasn't Barbarella, but I know, yeah, actually, I'm not even sure I've ever seen Barbarella. I just know it because it's always mentioned, and I think I've seen, like, the pictures of the posters.
Yep.
She broke the machine.
I might have to watch that movie sometime. But, man, it's going to come to me sometime. But, yeah, that was definitely an excellent write from Betty. All right. And up next we have Take My Hand by Lowell. And we have a recording for that one, too. Go ahead. And here we go.
Take My Hand, a poem by Lowell. When shadows linger long and slow, and there's no safer place to go, when doors are closed and walls stand tall, and all you seem to do is fall, when desperation clings to you, and not a soul will follow through, when washed out eyes see nothing fresh, and tainted love has scarred your flesh, when you feel like you can't go on, and any hope you had is gone, when darkness beckons you to fold, I pray you'll take my hand to hold. And I will lift you from your hell, then break the chains you know so well, and I will offer arms out wide, then hold you close right by my side, and I will keep you safe and warm, then watch as you rise from the storm, and I will gently dry your tears, then ease the pain and end your fears, and you will know you're not alone, then with your blessing I'll atone, and clouds will fade to fine sunshine, and you will feel your hand in mine. End poem.
Great read, Lal. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. Greatly appreciated. Now, this holds the spiritual aspect that you hit earlier, even with the picture. But it goes a little deeper than that, since it does walk in the spiritual aspect of taking that which is offered on a spiritual level. It also hits on the tone of a good friend. Don't push them aside. Let them tender and minister in the moment, and then you'll have something that walks beyond the pale after the storm has broken. How about you?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I really like what you had to say, how this, including the picture, speaks on a spiritual level, but it also speaks on the level of a good friend, somebody who's there for you, who's a solid rock that you can lean on. And I really always, you know, love hearing Lal's SoundCloud. She's got such a beautiful reading voice. You know, there are some poems that when you read them, they just make you sigh. Not a bored sigh, but the kind of sigh of like all the just emotions escaping from you. And that's what this one does. I love how she does the repetitiveness of I will, you know, the take my hand to hold and I will lift you from your hell, then break the chains you know so well, and I will offer arms out wide and hold you close right by my side, and I will keep you safe and warm, you know. It's all about faith and hope and trust. It's like the test where you stand on top of a table and you fall backwards with somebody behind you because you trust that other person can catch you. And on a spiritual level, it's about having that, just that mustard seed of faith to reach out and allowing God to do the rest. And on a partnership, a friendship, a marriage, whatever kind of partnership you have, it's about admitting at times that you're the weak person in the moment and you need the other person to be stronger. And then the interesting thing about that is that it can always switch off. It never has to be the same person. What I really like about this is that it does give the message of just, you know, trusting and loving completely. And as always, I mean, my goodness, her rhyme and flow is just spot on. Absolutely a beautiful write and very well done.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. Well, I tell you, we have some amazing poetry tonight. All right. Next off, we're going to delve into The Sound of Rainbows by Diane D. And that is also another one that we have a recording for. And here we go.
The Sound of Rainbows by Diane D. The heavens opened and a rainbow fell to earth, dripping colors like the stringed instruments of an orchestra. Thunder boomed, a brilliant crack of scarlet protest. Echoing across the room, lightning returns its call, shouting the names of colors to a rain-splashed sky. Plunging into the valley of painted stripes, millions of billions of bubbles of dew Kit Kat, the Brains Ballet. Indigo hummed in purple as weeping stars sighed. The staggering drunk clouds billowed in hue. Brush streaks of color tap dance across the rusty sky. The silence of an African dawn taps the piano keys. Thick gray fog gasps for breath underneath the bongo drums of violet rain. An angry riot of colors took to the porch-lit streets. Moonbows flip-flop like a screeching beach whale. The hush of the evening rang out in megaphones. A mermaid moon belts out funnels of orange ice. The wind's various chimes hanging from the eastern trees sing. Metallic full-throated growl of thunder echoes like the crunch and roll of neon peppercorns. All stillness in the morning air goes fit, fit, fit. Rainbows murmur to the thrum of azure rotors. Melodies of green ring musically in noiseless flight, making the flitter flutter of butterflies whistle. Cover your ears in cotton pillow earmuffs so as to chime the purple footsteps when Rainbow dances his final waltz across a tiny sky. End poem.
Great read, Diana. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam. Aha. You got the color on this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. This is just absolutely beautiful. First of all, wonderful reading SoundCloud. You know, instantly, well, this makes me think about, I was reading earlier about how one of Pythagoras' theorems was the idea that the planets are mathematically aligned like musical notes, and therefore they radiate a music, a symphony that the human ear cannot hear. And I feel like with her use of sound along with a color, she delves into that realm of that music and sound of the world. I really liked how she used the flit, 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 using the sound. All stillness in the morning air goes flit, flit, flit. That was really creative. And let's see. Echoing across the room, lightning returns its call, shouting the names of color to a rain splash sky. That is just absolutely beautiful. I read this quote today, and I'm slightly paraphrasing it, but it was like, the reason the rain falls to the earth and then rises back up to the sky is because that's the way the sky and the earth tell each other that they love each other, say how they love each other. And I really like how this seems to be about the communication that's between us and the earth, between the earth and the sky. And the staggering drunk clouds bellowed in hue brush strokes of color tap dance across the rusty sky. I think that is some of the most creative imagery I've ever seen. And then she goes into the bongo drums of violet rain, a mermaid moon belts out funnels of orange ice, the wind's various chimes hanging from the eaves and trees sing metallic full-throat growl of thunderous echoes. The whole thing just, it's a beautiful, empowering look at the music and the art that comes forth in a storm. I just think it's just an absolutely beautiful piece and very well done. And, of course, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, Rex.
Well, that's beautiful. And besides all the color, played a lot with onomatopoeia to help lay out the thoughts in Thunderboom, a brilliant crack of song. call it protest, all walking that the theme of thunder itself. Lightning returned its call, shattering the names of color for rain by sky. What else? Millions of billions of bubbles and dew, tit-tat the brain ballet. The staggering drunk clouds bellowed in hue. Again, the sort of rain offered up as well as the thunder behind the thought. That was Silence of African Dawn, taps the piano keys. There's a nice undertone there, because you think of African Dawn, you think of drums, drum beats. Again, the sound of rain. And then you get the bongo drums of violet rain on the third line down. An angry ride of colors took the porcelain street. Again, all that sound walking itself across the world itself. What else we got? I did like the thought of a mermaid moon belt up funnels of orange ice. Because there is a little notion there every now and then the moon does give off little tidbits of plumes, vaporized water in the moment. Metallic full-throated growl of thunder echoes. Again, the sound and the movement within it. I like the thought, next one, like the crunch and roll of neon peppercorn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that one. What is neon? What do you see neon peppercorn as being?
Well, you can get white peppercorns, black peppercorns, and red peppercorns. And you can actually buy all three
that I know.
And mix together, which you can run it through a pepper mill. You get the best of both. The white is a lot stronger if you can use too much of white and not know it until you go to eat it. Black is a little more familiar because it shows up, and red has a little bit of bite to it.
Yep.
And again, rolling through the sound with flitter, flutter, butterflies whistle. And cover your ears in cotton pillow earmuffs. Again, instead of reality there, there's a little bit of cloud. And the time sky, that has me thinking of lightning.
Oh, that would make sense. That would make sense. Yeah. I'm still stuck on the neon peppercorn.
It's the crunch.
If you put
the neon peppercorns on the floor and you stood on them, they crunch. You don't really get,
yeah,
you
but,
get a little
okay.
bit of that
maybe
sound,
I'm too,
pepper mill.
Right. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too stuck on the word neon. Because I know, like, all the stuff you're telling me about peppercorn, like, that I knew that there's the red, the white, I tend to use black myself, but, you know, I'm just really stuck on the use of the word neon, and
it's bright. You think of a lightning strike, and you get that real sharp burst, and it kind of dulls. You get a neon glow.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Oh, very cool. All right. Yeah, I have to say, you're right about her use of sound. It just was absolutely wonderful. All right. And I'm going to guess by now Versus is not going to be able to call in. So I am putting up his poem, Overwhelming Feeling, by Versus Goliath and Rex. Go ahead and give that a read, please.
Let's see, what do we got? A lengthy composition. Okay. Overwhelming Feeling, by Versus Goliath. Do you consent to have these words affect you? yes or no. Simple. Colocasia, gigantea, hydrophobic leaves, smooth, slick verdant waves as it breathes, tall enough for a personal rainforest. Swaying beside variegated cleodendron, white lines create Mandelbrot fractals, psychedelic reflections daily, quite awesome. Appreciation of all around is only practical. Smoke bellows from the end of zigzag cigarette. Its acrid beauty seizes an opportunity, causes red eyes, lacrimal drip, growing droplets, hidden puffiness out of masculine vanity. Thank goodness Florida weather explains wetness. Showers after showers. It's that humid. Mistake after bloody mistake. Only human. The wary Evictus sticks, its non-venomous tongue out, smelling for the creepy crawlies family detests. Golden brown, tiny head leads its body to scout. Astellopnochlora coliana, whose great disguise stands no chance against Jacobson's organ in mouth of predator. Stealthy in its approach, successful hunter. Poet's taste buds collect acidic Colombian blend. Myth of spiciness may be false, but don't ask opinion on whether cooked concoctions will be your end. It's the variety of life. Revel in each second to a degree others don't seem to understand. Dune made it a drug, once on, easily addicted. No amount of astral projection could meet demand. Isn't it sweet? The cinnamon sugary yam, buttered potato meat, orange and delicious, even arimal would relish consumption. Bam! Add fluorescent crimson pepper prick cayenne as a base for a paste with ginger, garlic, salt, lemongrass accent, fish sauce, coriander, cumin. Blender emulsifies a tasty Thai curry starter. If you can't stand the heat, get the fuck out of the kitchen, as the cook already got too much going on to hear you bitching. Complex calculations done in milliseconds. Carne asada sizzles as refried beans come together. The hatched chili brings out a side recommended, folded and softened to avoid any unnecessary splatter. Guacamole, pico de gallo, previously made, refrigerated. Flavors melt perfect, glide on gustatory cells light as a feather. Heat and time make diamonds from carbon, the pressure necessary beyond comprehension. Everything's fine. It'll make sense in a few eons. Just maintain yourself amidst all external tension. One day, someone will carve you into something adored and then pawn you off when they decide they're bored. Deep sea divers will find you by now, useless bones. Scuba masks find a scream exuberantly at their discovery. Behind yellow-pink coral, this treasure theirs alone, and you both can start that long journey to self-recovery. See you on the other side, these eyes bluing and dark-shaded, after midnight square residing, vision blurry and irises wither, faded, a poet slowly dying inside, or perhaps just beyond expiration date. Calendar flips its pages at impressive speed, no matter the arguing, it never to slowness leads. Soon enough, these strawberry blonde locks will recede, and from the prison of time, another poet will be freed. End poem. I got to read.
All right. Yeah, that was an excellent read, I have to say. I'm definitely willing to comment first, but I have no doubt with all the way that he just delved into those different food and cooking metaphors that you, Mr. Chef, are going to have a lot of fun commenting on this one. First of all, I like how he starts out with, do you consent to have these words affect you? I thought that was really clever. Hydrophobic leaves, smooth, slick, redonce, waves as it breathes tall enough for a personal rainforest. And psychedelic reflections daily, quite awesome. Appreciation of all around is only practical. It's interesting to have such almost mythological, metaphorical language mixed in with scientific language, and then the whole idea of just simply appreciating. I like that he mentioned, I thought, you know, he throws in some wonderful cultural references. I like that he mentions the zigzag cigarettes. I mean, because instantly I can picture my mom and anyone else I knew who rolled their own cigarettes with the paper and the tobacco and measuring it out. Let's see. Where else? Hidden puffiness out of masculine vanity. Thank goodness Florida weather explains wetness. I like how he touches there on the idea that men are taught you're not to cry, and if you ever look like you're crying, think of an excuse. And the humor that woven throughout this, like the whole idea that the wetness is explained by the Florida weather. I thought that was very clever. I like the reference to the. I assume since it's capitalized, the movie or the book Dune. Dune made it a drug once on, easily addicted. No amount of astral projection could meet demand. Then the reference to Emerald. Isn't it sweet, the cinnamon, sugary yam, buttery meat, potato meat? I mean, all that imagery. I feel like there's, it feels like a sex addiction. That's what the direction I'm going in. It feels like, it feels like addiction in general, but I really get the kind of the idea of an addiction to sex. He goes into some really amazing, like, things that not only taste amazing, but smell amazing. Ginger, garlic, lemongrass. Now I'm hungry for curry. But this has to be, the whole thing is great. But if you can't stand the heat, get the fuck out of the kitchen. As a cook, already got too much going on to hear your bitching. I like that whole, it's such a kind of a punch of attitude and the whole idea of that I'm the one working to fix the problem. I don't know. Let's see. I gotta find one more. I probably shouldn't find one more, but just the emotive impact of this. And that ending, soon enough these strawberry blonde locks will recede, and from the prison of time another poet will be freed. I like that whole idea of almost a transformation of self as we free ourselves from whatever a prison, whatever addiction or past has a hold of us. I think it's definitely a powerful and creative rite. Wonderful use of cultural references and cooking metaphors, and just very well done. And of course, I'm looking forward to what you have to say, Rex.
It's not as observational. The colocasia gigantea hydrophobic leaves. The colocasia is a tropical and subtropical plant. And he's offering it up, the thought tall enough for personal rainforest is a nice touch. The variegated clerodendron is also a plant in the mint family. It contains bleeding heart and a couple of other glory flowers and something bower as part of its collective genus. White line. Create Mandelbrot cycle. So I like that. That draws on the Mandelbrot set. It's a calculation of fractal planes. So coming up with the variegation, that's a nice touch. Appreciation of all that is on the practical. And that hits on those first two stanzas, the thought of enjoying that which you see in front of you. Now the next one comes off the other angle. Smoke balance from the end of a zigzag cigarette. Well, I think I'd go with that as being a misnomer because I don't know anybody who's ever used zigzag and used it for cigarettes. It's always for weed because he always hits in there. Acrid BBC sonoma causes red eyes, lacrimal grip, hidden puffiness out of masculine vanity. Thank goodness Florida weather explains wetness. Nice touch there. showers after showers. Is that humid? Yes, it is. Beraria victor sticks. It's non-venomous tongue out. All right, we're getting to, now we're getting into the notice of the other the things that crawl within that garden of beauty. Snake, the creepy crawlies, golden brown tiny heads, its body to scout, and the fact of catching itself. The only thing it didn't hit into with this was palmettos. Now those are nasty puppies. A poet's taste buds collect acidic Colombian blend. I'm thinking that that's right there, the morning coffee, the variety of life. And then you hit on this note, Dune made it a drug, once on, easily addicted. No amount of astral projection could meet demand. That kind of hits on, yes, you do kind of get stuck on the thought of you got to have the caffeine. Isn't it sweet? The cinnamon, sugary, yam, buttery, buttered potato meat, orange and delicious, sea nettle with relish consumption, bam. Add fluorescent crimson pepper, prick kalyang as the base. Now, I like this one, mixing a nice Thai curry starter. Coriander, yes. Cumin, fish sauce, you got to be careful with that. Use a bit too much, ruin the whole bloody thing. Like sort of a fresh ginger, garlic, yes. And the lemongrass, definitely. And like he said, you can't stand heat, get the fuck out of the kitchen. This is kind of a progression of what's going on in a singular day during all the Florida weather. Complex calculations done in milliseconds. Carne asada sizzle, refried beans, hatch chili, guacamole. Gustatory cells, light as a feather. That is a nice aromatics. What else we got? This one, heat and time make diamonds. The thought within that stance is keep your head in the moment. Concentrate on what you're doing. You don't let the external garbage intermingle so as to throw you off your game. Well, the next one, one day someone will carve you off into something adored, then pouring you off on the board. That kind of hits on the thought of getting dumped. And 100 years from now, yeah, deep sea dive will find things that we've left behind, and they'll wonder what it is. Or maybe they'll know what it is and wonder how we managed to get through life on those bloody things. And to see you on the other side, these eyes blueing and dark shaded, and a blurry iris is wither. It's kind of like it's a moment of death, walking through the end of life, faded. A poet slowly dying inside, or perhaps just beyond expiration date. That might be a thought to send to self, expressing, have I run my course in words? And again, kind of the death of passage of time hits for the last one. Calendar flips its pages. Before you know it, you've gone from 15 to 45, and it doesn't slow down. Strawberry hair recedes, and from the prison of time, another poet will be free. That's hitting on the notion of the end of the line and moving into the next existence.
Wow. I'm just really impressed. It's always just fascinating to me to listen to you pick apart a poem. And, that was just an excellent comment. And I did like that you brought up that couplet where it said, one day someone will carve into something adored and then pawn you off when they decide they're bored. I felt like that was a really important couplet and that I overlooked in my commenting, which I'm glad of because then I'm able to hear you.
It could be the ease of from birth up top with the thought of the rainforest, so to speak, and the dawning of the world, then the creatures, well, those would be the first things that walked in as well. But then again, it can walk in a whole lot of other things too. But I'll tend to sit there. It kind of hits on that notion of starting with the life, noticing things, walking through life until one has passed on from life.
Yes, yeah, kind of more
or,
vividly.
Hey, I'm just going to give you everything I see today, and this is it because I'm making some food, I'm smoking a joint, and I'm having a good old time.
Yep, there you go. All right. Well, I do have to give you a heads up, Rex. My son, Jaron, has woken up, and he is shut in his room, and he just seems to be running around and being good now. But I'm giving you a heads up in case I have to step away for a few minutes and, take care of something. So, all right. So
if you're
going to
do that,
ahead.
You better give me another peek like that.
Do what?
So if you're going to do that, I'm going to need another piece like that.
Right. Well, what you'll do is you'll just probably end up reading like two pieces in a row and commenting on them both while I'm, wrestling him and giving him an extra dose of medicine and whatever else will keep him quiet and all that fun stuff. But I'm not sure we have any more rights like that, but, all I know is once the show is over, I'm in for a long night. So we'll have to see how things go. All right.
MacGyver it. Get out your duct tape and tape them up.
Oh, my gosh. Tempting. And I actually just bought a roll of duct tape, so very tempting. Yep. And, all right. Up next, we have Terror Cells by Time Teller. And it goes like this. I still throw a little salt over my left shoulder, superstitious or just covering all my bases, like a cautious Virgo does. And I believe Pythagoras to be true in that the sun evaporates seawater, leaving behind salt. The summer heat produces air currents that suck out the life from plant leaves, and shrubs often can be seen to suddenly lose a limb. When I look closer at the soil, I can see white deposits left by evaporation. In my too willing state to please, I feed the plants, perhaps too much, and the sun evaporates the water from the soil, leaving salt deposits, ionic compounds with their positives and negatives, somewhat like the actions of feeding. As solids, they are insulators laying upon earth like white blankets, but on dissolving, they separate into ions that flow in films of water through the root zones, becoming superconductors with the physiology of tissue. And I see an army solid in formation, separate and travel the world. As ones and twos, like acids and bases, they scorch and burn. They're separated, putting in now electrolytes that filter and flow to society, conducting their charges. Until we become shocked and paralyzed to do anything, our changed state of fear turns up upon each other, and our branches, limbs, and leaves wither as the heat of war evaporates the innocent and leaves the salt. End poem.
Great, Pam. You want me to start off again after that last comment? All right.
Yes, I do.
I like the cliched thought in the opening. Salt over the shoulder because you still some superstition walked its way. Now, I do like, and I believe Pythagoras to be true in that the sun evaporates seawater feeding behind salt. That's true. That's why you can find salt in some mesmerizing place. If you look at the Bonneville salt flats, you look at the Himalayas, you get Himalayan sea salt. You look around the world that used to have oceanic tides rolling across it, and you find salt.
salt mines underground have always been searched for their value. From God, from time immemorial, once salt was discovered, they found it. It preserved, and that was, well, the one true thing before refrigeration and everything else came around. And now the summer heat produced air currents that suck out the life from plant leaves and shrubs, seeing something lose a limb. Yeah, they get a little frilly around the edges, and then you drop a little water on them to bring them back to life. But sometimes, in our haste, we actually overwater, and then they take a little bit more time to come back. But I like the thought in this because he rolls through all of the thought with the physiology of not just plant tissue, but it goes into human tissue and the angle on the bottom end, how a charged society discombobulates and folds in on itself. Because you've got who are willing to flap their gums over just about anything, and those who are fearful to offer up because something might happen to them because of that mouth. And there's an evaporation of society as a whole. It separates. And there's a burn there. Now you can have it.
Now I will throw to ye my scraps, mere peasant. Enjoy, right?
I didn't use it all. I just went and hit on a few things.
And you did an excellent job of hitting on those few things. Yeah, I really like how this is a combination of science and philosophy. I like that he opens up with, I still throw a little salt over my left shoulder, superstitious, or just covering all my bases. It's kind of like that whole thought of, you know what, why not? It's not hurting anything, so, and perhaps it will work. And I like that he goes into the details of, how the water evaporates and leaves behind the salt deposits. And I think it's what a really important part of this was when he says, when I look closer at the soil, because sometimes to see what's happening, it's like the whole idea of, like we were talking about earlier, the big picture. I really like that he says, in my too willing state to please, I feed the plants perhaps too much. And you touched on that, the whole idea that, you really need to, it's all about balance of soil, light, water. I'm one of those people who's notorious for killing plants. And I think that on a metaphorical level, hold on, I'm sorry. I just stepped on a piece of wood or something and got a splinter in my toe. Let me pull that out. Okay. Great. There we go. All right. So, but I think it works really well on a metaphorical level, and the idea of pleasing, wanting to please other people too much to the point of giving too much of yourself. I also was fascinated with the idea when he touched on the, and I see army cell information separating travel the world as ones and twos, like acids and bases. One of the theories of Pythagoras is that the world is made of numbers, that the one is the base number, and then I can't remember what two was. I want to say like two is the number of creation, and three was that perfect number because there is the beginning, the middle, and the end. I feel like the ones and twos are kind of like the idea, the thought of the metaphor of those who are sent out first for war. And I did like how it was really biting in the whole idea of us becoming shocked and paralyzed, unable to do anything because our state of fear leaves wither at the heat of war. I like how he took this from simply being about how plants are being mistreated to how people are being mistreated. And it really just kind of almost emotionally slaps you in the face. Evaporates the innocent and leaves the salt. And you know, what I think is how that works really well as a metaphor is the idea, because we're so fascinated. We use salt for so many things. We look at the salt as a gift and don't necessarily, and of course by salt, I mean anything that pays us off not to see that the innocent have been slaughtered. So I think it's an excellent write and very well done.
It's stuck in the juicer, and what's left is the bitter remnants of self-description.
I like that. Cool thought. All right. Well, I'm going to interrupt this regularly scheduled program to say that for tomorrow's Twisted Tuesday show, or tonight's Twisted Tuesday show, I have two contests running, and they both really need rights. And I'm taking time to say that now because I figure there might be more people listening now than in the last 30 seconds of the show. And my other good news is that Jaren's bedroom light is off, which means when he did get up, he was obviously just walking around in his sleep and has gone back to bed. So I am happy. All right. On to the next poem, Angels by Casey Day. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Angels by Casey Day. Let's let the ashes fall and fly off on the breeze. Lay our weapons down. Listen to our inner pleas. It's okay to admit it was just a mistake. Sometimes even angels fall down from grace. It's okay to admit it was just a mistake. Just as we rise, let's sing a song of peace. Only we can heal the cracks. Joined together in harmony. It's okay to admit it was just a mistake. Sometimes even angels fall down from grace. Can you admit that you made a mistake? Stop the war before it's too late. End poem. Now you get the first one.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Wonderful write, Casey. Yeah, I like that she put the Jackson Pollock painting with the write because I feel like they go together really well. I think this is beautiful in that it speaks to all humanity and has a mythological feel to it, but at the same time has a strength of character of what we need to do to make ourselves better. And I really like this all the way through, but it's okay to admit it was just a mistake. Sometimes even angels fall down from grace. It's okay to admit it was just a mistake. I like how she repeats those lines as if it's becoming a mantra. Like, it reminds me of the saying of the whole idea that a warrior is at his strongest when he's on his knees in prayer. Only we can heal the cracks joined together in harmony. And then I was going to ask the question, can you admit that you made a mistake? Stop the war before it's too late. I like this, how this is almost like a song, a mantra, a calling out for peace. And because it mentions, you know, our inner pleads in the first stanza, I really feel like that sense of peace happens first on the inside of self and then radiates to the outside world. I feel like that's part of the message of Casey's poem. I think it's a wonderful write and very well done.
This works on that sort of giving peace a chance and stop the war, but it's deeper than that. Laying weapons down, that isn't just weapons. It can mean anything. Words, action, deeds. only we can heal the cracks, joined together in harmony. Again, that thought of words, voice, rhetoric, and the fact that nobody is willing to offer up the fact that they screwed up in the first place. It's too damn afraid to say, yeah, I screwed up. Why? Because they're afraid they'll get demolished for it. Huh. Go ahead. So, no faith in humankind. Well, today's day, that is kind of hard for us considering everything that's going on with depression. And you must do as I say, not as I do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well said there. I like how you mentioned that a weapon can be anything, even how words themselves can be used as a weapon. These manipulation can be used as a weapon. I know you didn't say manipulation, but that's what I thought when you said words. Wonderful comment there, Rex.
It's just the words. It's what you offer up in the words, like Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, what they did to Kavanaugh, hell, what they're doing across the internet. Just an accusation gets you canceled. No proof, nothing to back it up, just the idea.
Yep. That actually, it reminds me of one of the quotes we have for next week's show, which is a thousand suspicions do not make a proof.
Right.
So, absolutely. Words and the way we use them, whether it's for good or bad, are definitely powerful. All right. Up next we have A Clouded Sky by Longfellow Serenade, and it goes like this. You search the sky for paradise, but clouds are in your way. The wind feels like it's made of ice, and all the world seems gray. And yet above those murky clouds are heavens you can't see. Beyond the Alstratus shrouds, there lies eternity. So don't dwell on the darkness, friend. Your search is not in vain. A clouded sky is not the end. The sun will shine again. End poem. Oh, man. I tell you, Rex, with some of the big $10 words that our poets come up with for our shows, for their rights, I feel like I'm getting a freaking college education in reading. I'm going to have to, start practicing more or something. There's some big words. I'm going to have to demand a raise. But, yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. You go ahead. Comment if you want.
Are you talking about Alto Stratus?
Yeah, that was. That was like beyond the Alto Stratus shrouds. That was, I have to say that was at least a $5 word thrown in there.
All right, it hits on gloom and melancholy, but it also paints the other side. Always look on the bright side of life.
I do miss that intro song.
That's about as simple as it gets from my thoughts, because that's the ease in the paint here. It's an easily thought piece that one can reference easily.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I like sometimes when, you know, I like when poems are relatable. And as you mentioned, you know, it has a melancholy feel, but it goes, like, beyond that sense of hope. Of knowing that beyond the gray shrouds of the fog in your heart is that light of hope. And this, as always, he's got wonderful rhyme and flow, which always makes him an absolute delight to read. And of course, yeah, it definitely makes you think of the song "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life." So just a nice, filled with hope and very well done. And see what we got next. Do-da, do-da, Campdown Racers sing this song. Oh, do-da-dee. All right. Up next, we have Human Nature by Julie Buck. And Rex, go ahead and give that a refresh, please.
Human Nature by Julie Buck. There are dreamers, there are achievers, there are doubters and believers. Human nature is to want, as ghost is to haunt. And alone I crouch in my corner, fearing that tomorrow will never come, and fearing also that it will. I live in darkness, you live in light. I want to run, you long to fight. When I am sad, I wish to die. When you are sad, you find out why. I claim to speak truth, when always you speak it. I blame the world for my pain, and you for my rage. I hide from the future, you engage in me and you. I back away from obligation, to say I was pushed. I am sin, with no one to confess to. And so, fun with this one.
All right. Well, you know, I always enjoy and appreciate Julie's writing. She has a style all her own. I always feel like she does a wonderful job of separating her stanzas so that if you have a single line like, you know, human nature is to want as ghost is to haunt and fearing will also that it will, it makes you just stop and really think about the lines and go through the poem slowly. I like when there's this kind of back and forth, this comparison. And alone I crouch in my corner, fearing that tomorrow will never come and fear also that it will. I think that's the most difficult fear, the most difficult crutch is, I don't know if crutch is the right word, but the most difficult prison of the mind is fearing that time will pass and then fearing that it won't. I live in darkness, you live in light, I want to run, you long to fight. And the interesting thing about that stanza to me is the fact that you start out thinking, okay, one person is in darkness, one person is in light, so we know who's good, we know who's bad. It's like the cowboys, you know, the bad guys wear the black, the good guys wear the white. But then it says, I want to run, you long to fight. And you look at those lines, and neither one of those are really a positive. The person who constantly wants to run is never willing to talk things through, never willing to face problems. But the person who always wants to fight is never giving anybody enough chance to, like, really stop and think, to breathe. You know, there's flaws in both approaches when it comes to conflict management. And I claim to seek truth when always you speak it. Now, that part, I don't think she meant it to be funny, but on a personal level, I found it funny because it reminded me so much of my son Gideon when he was little, and I had to constantly tell him that not every truth needs to be spoken. Fat lady at the grocery store doesn't need to know she's fat. You know, she already knows. He was just such, and his reasoning always was, if it was true, it could be spoken. And so there was kind of the whole idea of, no, you have to think on other levels besides truth. Yeah. I blame the world for my pain and you for my rage. I hide from the future. You engage in me and you. I back away from my obligation, but say I was pushed. I am sin and no one to confess to. I feel like there's a kind of an imbalance within this relationship. and that the, I can't quite explain it, but I get the sense of imbalance and the sense of loneliness, like I am sin and no one to confess to, feels like somebody who has been psychologically manipulated. And you know, there's really just, it's very dark and visceral and haunting, and the whole idea of someone feeling that completely lonely in their corner, in their darkness. I just think it's a wonderful emotive write and very well done. And what are your thoughts, Rex?
I am sin with no one to confess to. Well, there are a couple of sins in here. The thought, the sloth, wrath, maybe envy. What else we got? But anyway, this kind of walks on the thought of the dreamers, achievers, doubters, and believers. The dreamers and achievers walk together. Doubters and believers are the pessimism and optimism. Human nature is one, as a ghost is the horn. Right in there, it kind of hits the notion of duality and self, the part that wants to, and the part that disengages. Fearing that tomorrow will never come, and fearing also that it will. Again, pessimism and optimism, or pessimism and realism. Darkness and light, the yin and yang. So it's the brain itself working against you while you're trying to get to something. So you get that, I live in darkness, you live in light. Two sides of the same coin. And when I ask, I wish to die, when you have said, you find out why. Again, two sides of the same coin. And again, I claim to speak truth when you always speak it. I blame the world for my page and you, my pain, and you for my rage. Now, that hits on the same thought as well. You let one side control more than the other, or that you're afraid to fight that which you consider the sin to begin with, which is that part of you that does control.
I like that. Great observations, Eric. I have to say, just before you had said a duality of self, I was looking at the quote she'd written to, which is be strong in soul rather than strong in body. And I started thinking, maybe this isn't about two separate people, as you were pointing out. Maybe it's more about the struggle of the duality of self kind of going back and forth. And there is a whole feeling of that, as you said, with the line, the dark, the yin, and the yang. So I think those are some very cool observations you had there. All right. And up next we have Luminous Bodies of Reflection by Kay Hartless. Kay keeps saying she's going to eventually call into the show, one of the shows, and I hope she does at some point, because it'd be great to hear from her. All right. And the poem goes like this. Woolly, thick, gray worry, itching in the black of night, tossing, turning, spinning, the knitter stitches by starlight, spongy stones of fear towering against all flight, cold and craggy border, look for love's undying searchlight, legions all in armor, clinking swords of sharpest might, riding the horizon, paralyzed by blinding daylight, above the clouds with its shadows, secure in its superior height, a beacon of pure brightness, star with its infinite light. End poem.
Great read there, yeah. All right, let's see. Dream world, that first stanza. Woolly, thick, gray, worrying, itching in the black of night, tossing, turning, spinning, the knitter stitches by starlight, the knitter of dream. Then you hit on fear that rolls in here, paralyzed. Fear of what might be, what might not be, and actually engaging walking past your fear to engage, because you offer a little bit of hope with that last stanza, the star with its infinite light. Even within the darkest realms of our imagination, a little bit of light does shine through, and that's the star you got to follow, like the North Star. Cleave to something you can hold on to in the darkest of moments, and whether fear rages, so you can actually walk past it.
I like that thought. I also like that you chose the artwork Mathematical Dreams of Pythagoras by Michael Schulheis. I thought that was really cool. I've always been a big fan of metaphors that have to do with knitting and stitching and quilting. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's something I've always seen people do my whole life, and that it's just amazing to watch the process of something being created from nothing. I really like this all the way through, but that third stanza, the whole idea of legions on armor, clinking swords of sharpest might, riding the horizon, paralyzed by blinding daylight. To me, it just gives the thought that the most powerful warrior that thinks they have it all together with their armor and their sword can be knocked down by the power of light. It's just absolutely an amazing write all the way through and very well done. All right. Up next, we have In the Silence by Swan Song. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
In the Silence by Swan Song. I go to places where patriarchs have worked their roots deep into the dark brown soil, where ochre and green blend with blues and yellows of tiny buttercups and foxgloves wriggling slightly from a busy bee. High above moss-draped branches by shy song of a tiny brown finch is interposed only by the buzz of a calliope streaking through the heavy still air. I see the intermingling of life and death, of love and lost love in the dangling fly, trapped in gossamer jewelry of a spider's nest beaded with dew. A small sprig of pine tumbles on the green hooded head of a mushroom and remains with others that have fallen. Lifting my old eyes, they meet those with dark-eyed doe and recall the warmth when my eyes beheld yours the first and last time. For a moment in the stillness you touch me, I listen as small footprints walk near me in the other world where you are and poem. That one's all yours. Have at it.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, wonderful read. It is so good to see Jeff writing and sharing his work with us. I like that he refers to the old trees as patriarchs. I think that's absolutely perfect. And I like how he touches on the spiritual and meditative silence of walking through the woods. And I see the intermingling of life and death, of love and loss, love in the dangling fly, trapped in gossamer jewelry. The sense of awareness that comes from watching nature, from watching the fly struggle in the spider web, of knowing that it is a constant fluctuation and balancing of life and death. And then there's such a personal moment in that last stanza. You know, that it's beautiful, it's heartfelt, it is so tender in the idea that the stillness that makes the heart move and as it remembers. I just think this is absolutely a beautiful write all the way through, And one other little thing is I love the way he mentions little things like sprigs of pine and the head, hooded head of a mushroom. And it's not all about just the big tall trees, but observing the little things. Excellent write and very well done.
It's all about memories. It's all about life in the moment because death has already walked itself. And the only reason he goes here is to commingle once more with that which he once felt here and doesn't feel at home. There's safety, there's joy right here. And that's why it's such a visit. That's why it's that call.
I like that. I like that, the whole idea of the awareness in the moment. Did I tell you we have around here in our neighborhood, we have a doe with that has twins, and they have spent the whole summer just kind of walking around the neighborhood, going into people's yards. And Nessa said to me one day, she goes, "You notice the mother has a patch of gray on her flank, on her backside." And I said, "Yeah, that's because she's got twins, and they're probably boys, and they're probably making her go gray early." But so that's been our amusement for this summer, is watching the twins grow.
That's what she gets us dragging around.
Yep. All right. Well, we will carry over two poems. That will be "Whose Side Is It" by Thomas B. And "There's a Place for You Too" by Geetha. And wonderful show tonight, Rex. And go ahead and wrap it up.
Well, I think you just did because there's only two of us here anyway.
Well, it's your show. I always like to give you the opportunity to, you know, say something. All right. Well, next week we have quotes from Crime and Punishment. I'm running that contest. Check it out. And as I mentioned, Twisted Tuesdays, I've got two contests running for that. Check it out. For Wednesday, The Art of Seduction, Phil is running a contest with some beautiful quotes about the moon. So, of course, make sure to check out all the contests the hosts and hostesses are running and the topic board and Late Night Poets, because you're sure to find something that inspires. Right, Rex?
Absolutely. If it's not us, it's someone else, because there's always something brewing.
Absolutely, for sure. Well, awesome show tonight, Rex. What was that?
Want a beer? Come on in. Sit you down.
I'm sorry.
And righteous things. What?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, never mind. Well, good night, everybody.
I'm sorry. Have a good night.